Welcome everyone to The Odyssey. This is our second community conversation episode, and we are here with Amanda DeBock with St. Mary's Health to talk about Meals on Wheels. Welcome, Amanda.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
We're really excited to have you here. Bethany, why don't we start with the mission statement of Meals on Wheels?
All right. So I did a little bit of research before the episode, and I found the mission statement, which says that the mission is to promote the independence, health, and well-being of the elderly in Mesa County through quality nutritional services.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's really what we do. Good nutrition is really the foundation for all of our lives, right? Like, nobody can be a healthy, happy, productive person if they don't have that basis of good nutrition. So that's where Meals on Wheels steps in. We provide an easy piece of the puzzle for seniors who might be having a little bit of difficulty.
Yeah. I was also looking at, because we do Words on Wheels here at the library, which a lot of focus goes into the social aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up a study that was done in 2016, and it compared traditional delivery, so every day for Meals on Wheels, and once a week delivery for Meals on Wheels, and then the people on the wait list.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked at it for a period, I think, of about 6 months, and found that the individuals on the traditional meal delivery and the once a week had better scores on the loneliness scale than those who were on the wait list. So it really does impact people's loneliness.
It really makes a huge impact on our seniors' lives. Just the majority of our clients, the home delivery clients in particular, the only people that they see, the only people that they talk to on a consistent basis is their home delivery driver. Like, that's it. And isolation is such, I think we've all, because of the pandemic, have a more personal relationship with isolation and what that really means when you're staying home alone, when you're not seeing people. This is seniors' everyday life, and that's what it's been like for them for years. And the health equivalent for isolation, it's physically really bad for you. It's the same health-wise as if you smoked 15 cigarettes every single day.
Oh, my God.
That's an astounding statistic.
Yeah.
Like, that's for everybody. So I think we've all kind of realized, oh, when we're not seeing people, when our world starts getting smaller, that it really affects us in a big way. And I think they're kind of, I've noticed, at least like in my world, that I think the community is really starting to take notice. And they're like, oh, this is tough for me now for a couple of months, for a few months, but this is someone else's everyday life, and we need to really do something about it. So it's really, if there can be a silver lining, it is almost that silver lining of people are really realizing that isolation is bad, really bad, and that it really affects a really vulnerable population.
So this is a great service because it not only provides meals and nutritional services, but also that social interaction.
Yeah,
with people.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I know that I'm a little bit biased, but I really do think that Meals on Wheels is like the world's most perfect program. Like, it just does so much for so many people. And there's a reason why, like, almost any Meals on Wheels across the nation, across the world, because Meals on Wheels is all over the world, everyone says it's so much more than just a meal. Like, it's so much more than just a meal. We provide so much more than just the meal, which is, again, vitally important. But we provide emergency checks. Just 2 weeks ago, we had a volunteer. He went out on a Friday, and one of our seniors, he had fallen. And the volunteer had to call emergency services to come out and help him get up and take him to the hospital. He had had an accident. And then the week later, he was doing his delivery route. And the same thing happened with another client. So in the span of 2 weeks, we had one volunteer literally save two lives. Because it happened on a Friday. So the client, they wouldn't have seen anybody all weekend. They would have been on the floor alone, helpless, until Monday. So it's really, it's really, again, it's the world's most perfect program. Like, I just...
What a horrible situation, but what good luck that volunteer was already going to those places.
Yeah. You know, and we hear stories like that all the time. And, you know, our volunteers, we have a volunteer corps over the course of a year of about 300 people. So it's a lot of people in the Valley that come out and help us out. And the stories that we hear from our clients about the volunteers are just so sweet and so heartwarming. Like, we have a couple of volunteers that they just happen to have a favorite client. So, like, every Saturday, they go and hang out with her. They, like, take her dogs for walks. And, like, you know, if she needs to go and run some errands, they'll run errands together and, like, do stuff like that. And we would never know because the volunteers don't. They don't brag about it. They don't tell us. You know, we'd have no idea about it unless the client just happened to share that story with us. So it really, this makes it makes such a huge difference in so many seniors' lives, just like an unimaginable difference. And plus the volunteers too. The majority of our volunteers are seniors themselves. They're all, most of them are 60 plus, not all of them, but a lot of them are 60 plus, retired. And this provides a way for them to still stay active and involved in their community. Mm-hmm. And when a senior stays active and involved in their community, they're 6 times more likely to stay out of the hospital, right? Like, it's just, again, it's the world's most perfect program.
No downsides at all.
Really, none. Literally none.
So this program started locally in 1970.
Yes.
And it was completely a volunteer service. Mm-hmm. But now it's offered by St. Mary's. So how did that transition happen?
So St. Mary's is our sponsor organization. So they're our fiscal sponsor. We don't have our own 501c3. Mm-hmm. We have it through them. Usually how I like to explain it to people is that we don't have our own bank account. St. Mary's is our bank account. They also provide another level of oversight, right? So we receive, the majority of our funding is from the federal and state government through the Older Americans Act. And whenever you receive federal money, which I'm sure you guys are aware, there's a lot of oversight. So my program, personally, we get audited programmatically. So they come and they audit the program about 3 times a year.
Oh my gosh.
Right? We've got one coming up in like a couple of weeks. So there's always someone kind of looking over our shoulder, like making sure that we're doing everything, you know, above board. We get audited 3 times a year regularly. We've never had an issue. We've never had anything really come up. And part of the reason is because we do have 15 people. I have like a million people that I have to answer to, you know, to make sure that I'm doing everything right. So St. Mary's is one of those organizations that just kind of makes sure that we're kind of doing everything exactly the way we should. They also are very generous with their in-kind donations. We say that their in-kind contribution is upwards of $300,000 a year. They provide all of our IT support, all of our phone stuff, HR, legal, all of the stuff like that, like they provide for. Everything that the program pays for, so anytime I have to write a check, that's paid for with money that we raise independently of them. Mm-hmm. But they provide all that kind of all that oversight.
That's great to have that big organization behind you.
It is. It's such a blessing. It's by far and away like the best thing. So that happened in 1989. Originally, the sponsor of the program when we first started receiving federal funding was Mesa County. In 1989, there was the Black Friday or there was some kind of bust. Oh, here in the Valley, there was a big economic downturn, and the county decided that they could no longer financially be responsible for this program. So it went up. They put out RFPs, and a lot of people wanted to take it over. But St. Mary's really won because all of the money would stay local. So it wouldn't, the money wouldn't be passed through to like someone in Denver or anything like that. So every single penny that we raise stays right here and goes right to our program.
You were also telling us you were about to tell us an interesting story before we started recording. So I had asked you about the difference between Grey Gourmet and Meals on Wheels, which I often get confused about, and I'm sure some other people do as well. So do you want to tell us the story behind this?
Sure. So in 2018, we made the name change from Grey Gourmet to Meals on Wheels. Grey Gourmet was always a member of the Meals on Wheels organization. We were always a Meals on Wheels program. And we had found whenever we're out and about and explaining to people who we are and where we're, what we do, we'd say Grey Gourmet, and they'd be like, oh, what's that? And then we'd be like, oh, we're Meals on Wheels. And then they would understand. So we decided it just made sense to make that name change. But Grey Gourmet came about because in 1974, there was some big change in the program. They were adding, I want to say they were adding from the congregate sites. So where people were coming and having lunch together, they were starting the home delivery side of the program. So they had a whole story in the Daily Sentinel about naming what this program should be called. And there was like a big contest. It was a big deal. There was like, I have all of the newspaper clippings over at my office, so you guys can pop over and see them sometime. Yeah, they had this huge contest. It was a big deal. And Grey Gourmet with the little coffee pot symbol is what went out. And that's what we were called from 1974 until 2018.
That's hilarious. I feel like competitions for naming things are so popular. We did one for the Clifton Branch. It didn't work out. We kept it the Clifton Branch. But as a small aside, there's actually a town in New Mexico called Truth and Consequence.
TORC.
Yes. And it used to be Hot Springs, New Mexico. And it was changed to Truth or Consequence due to a competition, and it's actually the name of a game show.
Oh,
that
yeah.
They named the town after. So,
there was that boat in England, right? Remember where they did, there was like this big, huge boat, and they did a contest on what they were going to name it, and Bodie McBoatface won? Yes.
Well, when we sent out the call for people to submit name options for the new Clifton Branch that we're going to be building in a couple years, Bodie McBoatface was not a top contender, but we did get a couple submissions.
That's hilarious.
It's just so funny how sometimes we overthink something. Mm-hmm. Like we want people to be invested in this new thing, mm-hmm. and then it's just something as simple as, no, we'll keep it Clifton.
Yeah.
That's fine.
We'll just call it Meals on Wheels.
Yeah.
That works.
Make life easy.
Well, I love that. I love that there's that cute little piece of history in there.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of people were, you know, there were some people that were definitely upset when we made the name change because it had been, and that it was a really local thing. Like, local people here knew it as Grey Gourmet, and they really owned it. Like, they had ownership of that. And when we changed that, I mean, part of the reason, to be honest, was to have kind of more nationwide recognition, because we do get a lot of calls from out of state, from out of the area, because they want to take care of their parents that do live here, because this is a huge retirement community. So part of the reason was, you know, because of out-of-state people and because of things like that. And people knew that and weren't exactly pleased with it. But
well, and from a marketing standpoint, too, we've got a senior advisory board who our librarians meet with so much regularly. And a lot of them don't like to be reminded of aging,
mm-hmm.
and Grey Gourmet really hits home, like, you're basically homebound, you're getting old, whereas Meals on Wheels says, oh, somebody's bringing me something,
mm-hmm.
like, it spins it in a way that's a little less dark.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And we branded it really as a senior nutrition program, and then we were like, oh, people don't like that, so now we say 60 plus.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There was actually an article that our director Michelle sent to all of the staff members. We're doing design thinking training, and one of the things we're trying to focus on is making sure that people can see all the variables of a problem before putting together a solution. And one of the articles that she sent everybody was about a Danish program similar to what we have here. And when you're talking about senior nutrition, a lot of those like buzzwords are a bummer, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And when you can focus on the things like connection and making sure that people are getting fed delicious food in a way that it meets all those nutrient requirements, mm-hmm. but either it's a, you know, a community service based platform, or maybe it's just presented in a way that mirrors upscale dining, mm-hmm. It elevates the rest of that person's like holistic health. So when it comes to Meals on Wheels, which is, you know, you look at the colors of the branding, you look at the logo, you look at just what the, like the rhyming of it versus Grey Gourmet, mm-hmm. there's probably a lot more intentionality.
Oh, yeah.
That comes with that.
Well, definitely, too. And part of the reason why we switched, too, is because we are members of Meals on Wheels America. Mm-hmm. That organization spent millions and millions of dollars doing a brand refresh. So they came out with a brand new logo. They came out with like consistent naming. So if you kind of buy into this, and it didn't cost us anything to take advantage of this. Look, it's a free perk of the membership. You get access to like our fancy logo that was designed intentionally to be like forward movement. It's supposed to kind of look like a car with people in it moving forward, right? And it's the bright colors, and it's supposed to, you know, lift people up and things like that. So for us to be able to take advantage of that, I mean, we're, you know, we're a small program. The majority of our budget goes right back into programming. Mm-hmm. I think people would be fairly upset if I spent $1 million on branding Meals on Wheels. To have access to that without really having to pay much for it, I think our membership to be in Meals on Wheels costs like $225 a year, something like that, right? Like it's nothing. And we're able to get, you know, our fancy logo and all that kind of stuff out of it. So
yeah. So recap, you can call it Grey Gourmet,
cash the check for sure.
If you're supporting our seniors, we'll take it no matter what you write. Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the program itself and the logistics of it. Mm-hmm. That way, if we have listeners who are interested either for themselves or for their family members, they can kind of know what they need to do to get signed up, and how often deliveries are made. I'm sure it's a little different now with COVID. The dining sites might be a little bit different than they were before. But yeah, wherever you want to start us off.
So eligibility is really simple. If you are 60 plus, you qualify. Like that's literally it. That's awesome. If you're a 60 plus, I will give you food. So it depends on how you're going to get that food. Ordinarily, we do have the 9 dining sites, sometimes called congregate sites, where people can come together and eat lunch with their friends. And that, again, is a huge piece of that social isolation stuff that we were talking about earlier. It's really important for seniors to have a place to go that's really kind of just for them, where they can hang out and have that good food. Most of the people that we survey that come to the dining sites, they're like, we don't come for the food. We come because we want to hang out with people. And I'm totally okay with that. Yeah. The food is, you know, the icing on the cake. So ordinarily, we have the 9 different dining sites. Those are really simple to get signed up for. You just give us a call. We can go over the paperwork on the phone. And depending on where you live, if the dining site's open the next day, you can go get food the next day. Right now, the dining sites that are still opened are for residents only, except for our site out in Clifton. That we can still, they're all grab and go. So you can't come and have lunch together. You just come and pick up a prepackaged meal. It's the same meal that our home delivery people get. It's just packaged up and ready for them to go. So Clifton, they can come and still get a grab and go. And then we opened a drive-through over at our building.
Oh, awesome.
So between 12:30 and 1, people can come and pick up a food. Again, all they have to do is give us a call and make a reservation. And if they decide that they want to come on a regular basis, like if they're like, oh, you know, we really like this, we want to come every Wednesday and Friday, they can come up for every Wednesday and Friday, and they don't have to make a reservation every single time. So that's how the dining sites work. Home delivery is a little bit different. We do have a little bit more of an extensive qualification process. The paperwork's a little bit longer. But again, we go over with that all over the phone. So we make it fairly simple for them, fairly easy. Qualifications for that is that you do need to be homebound, So you have to be not driving. You have to be able to, like, not be able to go out and get yourself groceries and take care of yourself and things like that. But other than that, I mean, it's fairly simple to get qualified. Right now, because of COVID, we're seeing a huge influx in our numbers that my kitchen can't handle. So we have started offering frozen meals so that we can start getting people food right away. Ordinarily, we'd have to go to a wait list, mm-hmm. which you had kind of touched on earlier, which is great that people are, like, in line and they're waiting, but it's really hard on them when they're waiting. So we have a frozen food option that we can hand out once a week. So that's still delivered to them once a week. It has 5 frozen meals in it, so it's enough for a whole week. It still meets the nutritional requirements that all of the other meals that we send out. It's not like going to the grocery store and getting a frozen meal. The nutritional piece of it is much higher.
Yeah, those hungry men just aren't getting it.
Right? Yeah, like the sodium in that, like, is just, you're going to pickle yourself. We've got the frozen food option right now just so we can have a quicker turnaround time. For the past 3 months, we haven't had a wait list at all. We've been able to, which is huge for us.
That's awesome. Yeah.
You know, because people need food, mm-hmm. and they need it. They need it quickly. Ordinarily, we tell people that Meals on Wheels we're not an emergency food service. If you need food tomorrow, like if you're desperate and you don't have food in your cupboard, I will give you the name of 6 different food banks, but I can't help you immediately, not in that way. It does take a little while to get, you know, there's paperwork and all of the stuff. It takes usually at least a week to get stuff kind of up and running. But it's a fairly easy process. We try to make it as easy on people as possible, but that's really it. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, as horrible as this whole pandemic has been, it's provided an interesting opportunity for organizations to adapt their services.
Yes.
So going to frozen meals in order to keep people off the wait list is a really good example of that.
Yeah, no, we've really had to adapt. I mean, like, opening up the drive-through was a huge shift for us. And being able to do the grab-and-go meals, that's a huge shift for that. So technically, our funding is divided up by home delivery and the congregate sites. Technically, according to the rules of the state, a congregate meal is only a meal that's eaten with other people in congregate setting.
With the exception of a
right?
virus,
so we
right?
had yeah. yeah, so we had to get, like, we went into, you know, the state enacted their emergency protocols, and we were able to make certain changes so that we can make those grab-and-go meals available to people. Because at the end of the day, the state of Colorado just wants seniors to have the food that they mm-hmm. need. You know, like, that's really their most important goal. And they've been really supportive in that. And they've changed a lot of – we've had huge food supply issues, too. The food chain right now, there are pieces of it that are just – broken. Yeah. You know, like yesterday we had pulled pork with barbecue sauce today, and we got half the amount of barbecue sauce that we needed. So I had to run out to Sam's at the last minute and pick up 4 gallons of barbecue sauce. You know, so the food chain, the food supply chain is definitely has been an issue during the pandemic. And fortunately, the state of Colorado ordinarily has the highest standards for nutrition of a senior nutrition program across the whole country. They've been able to relax some of those rules. So our aim is to get as close as we possibly can to what we would ordinarily send out. But if we're a little bit short on our fiber count one day, we can still send out the meals and it still counts as a good senior meal, which we have to be able to do because of the break in the supply chain.
Yeah.
You know, if we order certain pieces of meat and that meat's not available, so we have to swap it out with something else, then that's going to change 3 of your, like, B6s or your, you know, B12 and things like that. It makes, like, it's this ripple effect that people just don't think of. And fortunately, the state of Colorado has been smart enough and kind enough to kind of relax those to really just trust the providers to be able to know that we have the seniors' best interests at heart and that we just want people to be fed.
Yeah. It's not, you're not going to not turn in a homework assignment if you're not going to get 100. Like, even if it's 85-90%, like, yes, you still got to do it.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and it's not like we're going to turn around and feed them McDonald's. Yeah. Right. No shade against McDonald's, but, like, you know, we're not.
You need some vegetables.
Yeah.
A cup of vegetables never hurt anybody.
In terms of the food production, because you're doing it on such a massive level, are you able at all to adhere to some people's dietary restrictions?
So we don't.
Yeah. I mean, that's totally fair. That's a lot of food.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we do. Like today, we sent out 511 meals.
Oh, my gosh.
So we do between 500 and 520 every single day. That's a huge amount. It's a huge amount of food. Right now, we just don't have the capacity to be able to make those specialty meals. And we get requests for it all the time. It's definitely down the road. It's something that we'd really like to be able to do. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's just not feasible.
Oh, yeah. That makes complete sense, for sure. And maybe if people were interested in volunteering and have some cooking skills, maybe they could start that process up for right? you guys.
Yes. I have a special volunteer squad to do gluten-free.
Yes.
Totally different building. Just to make sure cross-contamination doesn't happen.
Yes.
And for people who are not sure where your building is, it's actually right to the east of our Discovery Garden.
Yes.
And I think it's 551 Chipeta, right?
Yeah.
So it's right on the corner right there. It's diagonal to the studio.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we always say, like, it's kitty corner kind of behind the library, yeah. the main branch. We use that as our touchstone to explain to people where we're at, because everyone knows where that is.
Yes, yes. What other community partners do you work with? I noticed that there were some, like, Starvin' Arvins and the Fruta Thrift Shop. Are those more monetary partners?
So those organizations actually donate. So because we have 300 volunteers coming through, we have 25 routes that go out every day. Mm-hmm. So that's between 25 and 35 volunteers that kind of come in and hang out in the mornings. And we used to have this very nice reception area where they could come in and have breakfast and have coffee and have snacks and things like that. And Starvin' Arvins and Village Inn and Great Harvest, they all donated snacks for us in the morning. Fair. So they would make homemade cinnamon rolls, and we would go pick them up and give them out on, like, cinnamon roll day and stuff like that. So that was, yeah. So there's a lot of in-kind donations, things like that. Fruita Thrift Store, we are one of their partner organizations that they donate money to on a regular basis. So that actually is a financial piece of it. But we work with a bunch of other nonprofits as well. Right now, we're working heavily with Community Food Bank. We're delivering a food box, one of their, like, specialty design senior food boxes once a month for any senior that wants to get signed up for it. We partner with Royce Hurst. They deliver pet food to us so that we can in turn send it out to the seniors. We've really found that a lot of seniors would share their meals, which Aww. Are not giant meals. They would share their meals with their pets because, you know, your pet can't, again, isolation. If we're talking about isolation, pets are a huge help with isolation. So they would share their food with their pets and neither one of them were getting great nutrition. So we partnered with Royce Hurst to give out pet food. We've given out well over, you know, a couple of 100,000 pounds of pet food over the past couple of years. We received a very generous grant to do pet vet stuff. So if a senior has a pet that needs to go see a vet.
I'm tracking.
Right? We will. We can pay their bill for them. So we've been able to do that for quite a few seniors over the past couple of years. We partner with the Salvation Army during Thanksgiving. They send out a special Thanksgiving meal to the majority of our clients. We partner with Hilltop every year at Christmas. Hilltop does a Christmas Eve meal for everybody, which is like twofold presents for us mm-hmm. because one, our seniors are getting food, but two, my staff can take an extra day off, yeah. which is huge for it. We don't take a lot of days off. We're open. Yeah. We're open a lot. So, you know, so they do that for us at Christmas. We have a partnership with Mosaic. Mosaic sends people they've adopted a route. Before COVID, they had adopted a route, and they would come and do deliveries once a week. Guild Mortgage They send people out twice a week to do routes. Family Health West send people out to do routes. There's a couple of insurance agencies that send people out. We're trying to get a bank on board to kind of adopt a route and send people out. So it's really a community, like it's really just like a community smorgasbord of everyone really, they say it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a community to make a Meals on Wheels run.
I'm just like speechless. That is so many things in our community that are interacting with each other, yes, to serve this population. And that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm a member of the Mesa County Council on Aging as well. So we meet once a month. It's a bunch of different service organizations that serve the senior population specifically. And we all kind of get together and talk about what's going on with each other and what we can do to support each other. I'm also a member of Hunger Alliance from Western Colorado Community Foundation, where, you know, we're working on the blueprint to end hunger in Mesa County. But we're really, Mesa County is really the spotlight for the state of Colorado in having really strong initiatives to end hunger. We really have in the whole state kind of the most traction right now on specific planned ways to ending hunger. So we're really grateful to be a part of things like that.
We're grateful to have you here in the community.
I'm really proud of like the two blocks that we have right here.
This little area right over here. So how did you get involved with Meals on Wheels? Because you seem very passionate about it. And I'm interested on how, like, I never thought growing up that I would work in the library, right? And that would be my career trajectory. So I'm interested in how you got into this area.
Yeah, I didn't even know like a career in nonprofit was a thing, yeah, right? Like I was a multidisciplinary fine arts major. I literally did juggling in college.
That's awesome.
So, so ending up in nonprofit was kind of, but if I think, I really think that if I would have known about it, I would have been like, well, of course, this is what I'm going to do. You know what? I started delivering Meals on Wheels with my grandpa when I was 7 years old.
Oh my gosh.
We started, he had, at the time, he had 13 grandkids. So he would just cycle through and be like, all right, number 7, it's your turn. And we would go with him and deliver meals back in my hometown in Bradford, Pennsylvania. So it started when I was really young. And, you know, I think my grandparents both really instilled, we were not affluent by any stretch of the imagination growing up. We were poor, but we always made time and we always made the effort to volunteer. There is always something you can give, whether it's money or time. So that was always like, you know, I was a member of Key Club all through high school. And then when I was in college, I was in Alpha Phi Omega, which is like the service fraternity. Like all we did was dorky things. You know, like that was always a huge part of my life. And then, you know, I grew up and went into the workforce and I had, you know, dumb jobs like we all do when we get out of college. And then, you know, in 2012, I started working for Meals on Wheels in like in Westminster, the Senior Hub Meals on Wheels program. And then I took that over and ran that for 4 years before I came over here. So,
wow. I'm assuming it's a lot different in Westminster versus in Grand Junction, whereas we're kind of an isolated community, whereas that's part of the bigger Denver metro area.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Like, it's funny. Like it's similar and very different, like at the same time. And I think that's kind of how it is with all the Meals on Wheels. And like the state of Colorado, we are really lucky. There's a lot of kind of senior nutrition. I'm also a member of CANSDA, which is the Colorado Association of Senior Nutrition Directors. So pretty much all of the Meals on Wheels program managers, the people who run the programs, we get together a couple of times a year and just kind of, you know, talk about what's going on and how we're dealing. Because we all have the same rules and guidelines that we have to follow. I mean, I literally, like, we post pictures of it whenever we get audited, like the binder of rules that I have to follow. Literally this thick. You guys can't see it because this is 3.
We're looking to get 8 like, inches off the table.
It's big, you guys. It's really big. You know, so we get together and we're like, well, how do you how do you do this? Right? Like, what are you doing? And it's a really collaborative environment, which I think you have to we all steal things from each other.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and borrow things. Like, we with Meals on Wheels, Loveland, and Birthhood, we make jokes all the time back and forth about how we steal each other's recipes. And you can see it, like, on our Facebook. Like, if we make their meatballs, we'll tag them in it. You know, and they'll make our, like, lemon basil fettuccine and tag us in it. And, you know, it's really – I totally forgot what we were talking about. No. I'm sorry.
No, to kind of bounce off of that, like, library land is very similar. When the pandemic hit and we decided to shut our doors for the safety of our community, instantly public services and other departments who were involved with getting resources to patrons were researching and looking at other libraries. And collectively, the library across the nation was looking at, well, how do we extend our services in a way where we can get these items that our patrons use daily or need in a way that keeps everybody safe. So you guys implementing a drive-through, us and many other libraries started doing curbside services. We're looking at extending our Words on Wheels program. We've started to create take and make kits for our youth and our teens, and we're working on getting the adult ones going too, so that there's a option for people to connect without physically endangering themselves.
Yeah.
So part of that is talking with other organizations or people in the same, how do you describe it, the same field, and saying, well, I'm going to steal that. If it worked for you guys, it's going to work for us. And nobody's like, no, you can't do that.
Right?
The best idea wins. Why not share it across the nation if it's going to better everyone's individual communities?
Yeah. I think that's kind of the world of nonprofit. I think it'd be different if we all, like, finance people, right?
Oh, sure. Well, we would be vying for those people's money.
Yes. And, well, and I think that's funny, too, because I think nonprofit is a very small world, and the money that makes this very small world goes around is very finite and small. And I think that was a big concern for me moving here from the Denver area was, you know, is it going to be really stiff competition? Is it really going to be like cutthroat competition? Which it's been like that. Like, I worked in nonprofits out in California as well, and it can be, I mean, not really, like, cut. Like, as cutthroat as, like, you know, a 90-year-old, like, lady's going to be.
I don't know.
Right.
Feisty ladies.
You know, like, that was a really big concern for me moving out here was, is it going to be, you know, cutthroat? Are people going to be really territorial? Are people going to be willing to share? Are people, you know, is it going to be an open community? And it really, like, it really has been super open. Like, it has been like, oh, like, we're doing this and this is how I funded it. You should ask them for money too. Yeah. Right? Very much like a collaborative spirit, and there's enough for everyone and we can all make it work, which I think really speaks highly of this valley, because that's not the norm everywhere else. It really isn't. Yeah. So,
speaking of collaboration between nonprofits, what could the library do to support Meals on Wheels?
You know, and I think I've talked to a couple of people about it. I was on, like, right before the pandemic started, we were talking with a couple of people about senior isolation and, like, what we could kind of all do together. You know, I don't really know off the top of my head, to be honest. I'm open to conversations, and I think, like, your idea of doing, like, the take-home kits for kids and then, like, trying to get adults involved in it. I mean, if you want a distribution network, I have, you know, 400 people that, like, would probably really enjoy something. So off the top of my head, I can't really think of anything. I'll probably think of, like, 20 things as soon as
you have my email.
Walk out the building. But, yeah, I would love to be, especially because, you know, we're neighbors, you know, would love to be more involved. I think even just kind of having our because I think the population that utilizes the library can skew older, can skew into that 60-plus population. So I think you guys just being aware of who we are and what we do and who we serve and now how easy it is to get signed up for service, I think just kind of sharing that information with people, like, that would be be a huge help.
Yeah. And as I'm one of the Words on Wheels drivers as well, I feel like it would be very easy for us to have applications for Meals on Wheels that we could give to our patrons, yeah, or the contact information, because I feel like they do intersect quite a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to talk to the team and figure out more ways to collaborate, because yeah, it's such an important mission that you're upholding, as we've talked about, not just nutrition, but that social aspect, mm-hmm, even during the pandemic, which we unfortunately did have to stop making deliveries during the pandemic because the health department told us that they didn't think, maybe in not so many words, but that books weren't really necessary.
And, essential.
Yeah, essential. And so the risk associated with us delivering books wouldn't outweigh the cost.
Yeah. There.
Whereas food,
yeah,
these people have to have,
yeah,
food.
Yeah. So. Well, and we've made huge changes to how, mm-hmm, we deliver as well, because we, you know, because it used to be like we would go inside the home, yeah, and, you know, they would hang out for a little bit and kind of sit and chat and visit. And now they're, you know, we bag it up and we leave it on the door, mm-hmm, you know. And we try to tell all the clients, you know, you need to kind of wave through the window. You need to acknowledge your driver. We want to know that you're there and that you're okay. Again, that's a piece of the safety check. But there's a huge difference. Like, and that's one of the things that definitely keeps me up at night is – you know, we've taken away that interaction that's so, so vitally important for our seniors. And, you know, does the benefit of getting their food safely outweigh, you know, the isolation risk that they're having now? And I think right now it does, like the benefits outweigh the risk. But, you know, a few months from now, we'll have to kind of look at that and reevaluate.
Yeah. And then you think of people that say, oh, but what about technology? They could do Zoom. They could do FaceTime. And you have to think about not only the internet access that these people may or may, right, not have, but also the fact that a lot of them may not have those skills.
No.
And, I mean, we're doing tech help over the phone, but it's a lot harder to do that over, yeah, the phone, yeah, than it is in person. So there's just really not a good way.
No, there's really not. In July, we tried to do a Cooking Matters class, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, over the internet. And I don't think we didn't get a single person that actually, yeah, showed up to it. Well, showed up to it online.
Sure.
It was over Zoom. And, like, yeah, we didn't get a single person from Mesa County to show up for it. And we, you know, we advertised it and we – you know, and we were like, oh, we can, you know, walk you through signing up and things like that. And it just, it's one of those things. I think especially here in rural Colorado, mm-hmm, where internet access is spotty anyways, where it's not as ingrained in society as it is in other places. Yeah, it's, technology isn't always the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's just, it's not, like, people need that need that face to face.
Yeah. Well, even as we've been back in the building at the library for a couple months and slowly but surely adding volunteers back in, the volunteer coordinator has just received a flood of requests, like, I want to come back and volunteer, from our senior population, and it is 85 to 99.9% of the time because of the isolation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, it's hard. I think my mother-in-law is actually a volunteer for you guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was. I don't know if she still is. I don't think she still is, but she was for a while.
Yeah, and yeah, we're just, like, having to be really cautious about how and when we schedule and, mm-hmm, what those duties are, because we don't want to be liable for somebody getting sick.
No.
That's,
yeah,
terrible.
No, exactly. Yeah. I mean, all of our volunteers, again, we used to have that lovely reception area, mm-hmm, where they can come in and have snacks, and now they have to all hang out in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Like, and right now it's been summer. Mm-hmm. It's like late fall. It's been lovely weather. It's been nice. It hasn't been that bad. But, like, come winter, that's not going to be super fun.
Yeah.
You know?
They're, like, more than welcome to hang out in the Discovery Garden and get some nice shade in the meantime. But, yeah, in about 3 weeks, that's, yeah, going to be a little chilly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's we're kind of taking things as they come. We kind of started talking about maybe, like, letting them kind of in a tiered fashion, mm-hmm, letting them back in the building. So, like, letting some of them, like, if you drive routes 1 through 5, you can come in the building between, mm-hmm, 9:15 and 9:30, mm-hmm, you know, things like that. But at this point, I just don't know that I'm comfortable taking that risk because we don't have a huge building. And we, you know, again, most of our volunteers are seniors, so they're part of that more vulnerable population. Again, it's that question of, you know, is it, and we've been polling them a lot too, kind of getting their feedback because I don't want to take away their autonomy. Like, they're all adults. They, you know, are functioning adults and can make decisions for themselves. So we really have been trying to be like, you know, do you like this? Like, because at one point, the city redid the parking lot that we use, that we don't own. So the city owns that parking lot that's across from the Senior Rec Center that's kind of connected to our building. So we don't own that. They own it. And they decided that they were going to redo it during the pandemic because they're like, oh, no one's using it.
Excuse me.
we were still using it, but it was fine. It was really not a big deal. But during that time, we did a drive-through for our volunteers. So instead of coming in and parking and waiting, they came in through the one window and said what route they were. And then by the time they pulled around to the other side of the building, we had their route ready for them to go. And it actually like ran really smoothly and it worked out really well. So we were like, oh, well, maybe they just like this. Like, maybe they just want to do this. So we pulled them and we're like, you know, do you like hanging out in the parking lot or would you rather us do the drive through? Like, what would you rather do? And overwhelmingly, they were like, no, we like the parking lot. We would rather, like, because they'll stand, you know, at their cars and like scream at each other through the windows and that's their kind of social interaction as well. Yeah. So, you know, we're polling them, we're asking them what they want to do. Cause again, I don't, you know, they're all adults and we don't want to take away their autonomy. We can't just make blanket decisions as much as I want to make my life easier. We can't just make blanket decisions for everybody. So yeah, we're just gonna kind of see how it goes and what we can do with what's going on.
Yeah. I think a lot of businesses, nonprofits, what have you, pretty much anyone who's had to adapt in 2020, eventually I think we're going to come circling back to a question, which is what stays and what goes? Like, what are we going to revert back to versus like, oh, people could work from home and be productive and not have to be at home. Like, that's a cool thing.
But right.
Some people honestly we want to come to a physical building with other people because of that connectedness.
Oh yeah, no, I am definitely like, I know that I seem really introverted and like I'm not. I need to be able to come to work and talk to people. But then when I'm home, like, if you met my husband, you would think that he's like very tall and kind of burly looking and like he seems kind of standoffish, but he's the one that goes and chats with the neighbors. Like, he's the one that, like, when we go to the grocery store, finds the stranger to talk to, where I'm like avoiding looking at anybody's eyes. Right, like,
well, and some of those services, like, we were actually interviewing Brunella at Il Bistro for an upcoming Culture Fest video, and I was talking with her about the business service model that they've had to adapt, and they've now, the last time I was in there was maybe a couple months before the pandemic, and they've inserted like those freezer doors where, and they're making things ahead of time. And so now you can kind of have your option of a dine-in experience versus I'm going to take this thing and make it at home and it's going to be just as delicious because the chef already made it and all I have to do is reheat it. So certain like components to like that where you can still have that introvertedness when it suits you and you're still, you know, being able to put money back into the community versus no, I still want to do that thing the old-fashioned way because it fills a different need that I have.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, no, we're definitely looking at keeping the grab-and-go model because, again, seniors want choice. They want options. And some seniors, they like coming in and having lunch with everybody, and some of them don't.
Yeah. Or what if they want to take it to a park?
Yeah, you know, or yeah, or take it home and save it for dinner. You know, I think, like, we want to be able to give seniors as many options as we can. Because, again, we don't want to take away their autonomy. I think as you start to grow older, we tend to infantilize seniors. And, like, I'm definitely guilty of it, too. Like, I just bought them little Halloween, like, little packets for them to, like, put together. And they're definitely designed for toddlers. But they're still really cute, and I think they'll like them.
Yeah.
But we have a tendency to infantilize seniors and take away their choices and take away their options. So we're really kind of petitioning the state to make the grab-and-go option more flexible to make it still, you know, kind of work in that congregate setting where people can come in and grab something and go. Because I like that too. If I was an old, when I get old, I'm not going to want to go have lunch with strangers. I don't like people. I don't. Right.
Like, you mean, like, I can do curbside? I don't have to go and sit in the restaurant, right? With a bunch of people around me?
Yeah. Please, like, they'll come that to my car and bring it to me? Yeah, that, right? That's wonderful. Why didn't we think of this years ago?
Exactly. Well, as a last question for you, if somebody wants to get involved with Meals on Wheels and wants to volunteer, mm-hmm. are you taking volunteers right now?
We are. We're definitely okay. taking volunteers. We actually have a lot of kind of exciting new volunteer positions that are coming up. For the first time ever, we're going to start having volunteers in the kitchen. Ordinarily, that has always just been staff. So we'll still have to give you like your food handler's card. So there's a little education piece of it. But we are looking for some help in the kitchen on the line, getting things packaged up and out the door. So we're looking for that. We're looking for some volunteer receptionists. So in the morning between 8:30 and 12:30, we have volunteers come in to answer the phones for us to kind of free up. That's really our busy time with staff. We're always looking for drivers. We're still looking for help on the dining site side because we do have the grab-and-go options. And we're always looking for people to help us with reassessments. So any senior who's on our program, we have to go over their initial paperwork with them twice a year. Mm-hmm. So we serve 1,500 people a year.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Twice a year, that's a lot. Yeah. So particularly people with kind of past clinical experience, like previous nurses, doctors, people who are really good at filling out official paperwork are really good. Or like the other thing too is like really chatty people. Mm. When we have volunteers do that role, like they'll sit on the phone with people for 25 minutes, half an hour. And our seniors love it. They love being able to really sit and chat with somebody. Whereas when staff has to do it, you know, we're really busy. So we have like 15 minutes to do it, yeah. You know, so having a volunteer be able to do that. And that's one of those jobs that's super flexible. You can do it from home. You don't have to come into our office. You don't have to interact with a lot of people. So this is like the perfect COVID job. So yeah, we're still looking for volunteers. We're always looking for volunteers. All you have to do is give us a call and we can kind of get that started. And we're always looking for money. Donate at mealsonwheelsmesacounty.org.
That's what you're here for. Plug it, girl.
Donate now button. You know, yeah, I mean, really, like, honestly, at the end of the day, money really is, we always need volunteers and that's vital to our program. But money is probably one of the most effective ways you can help programs like mine. And I think almost any nonprofit, they might tell you different, but that's a lie. Money is always.
It's a polite answer.
Yes, right? I'm not polite. I'm sorry. Money is always what's going to help. Like, you can give me a dollar and I can turn that into three. I can go to other funders and say, look, this person gave me money. Like, you need to match it. Or I can take that money and buy, you know, because of where we buy things and how we buy them, you know, instead of buying three cans of beans, I can buy like 15 industrial size cans of beans with that. So your money is really, you know, the best option for helping. Never feel guilty because you can only give money. Any nonprofit right. will love you. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and also for all the wonderful work that you do in our community, you and your organization and the volunteers. We so appreciate it. And we would be happy to have you on again in the future.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Again, like, I'll show up anywhere. Like, you guys, there's, what is it? Like, if there's a can opening, I'll be there. But no, thank you. And we appreciate the library too. Like, you guys are wonderful neighbors. So.
Yeah. Well, it just seems like I know we're closing it out and I totally just added another sentence here, but like you said, the demographic we both serve overlaps a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think our passions and making sure that those members of our community are healthy and entertained.
Yeah.
Really help propel us as a community forward. So we're, like I said, excited to share a block with just the coolest people here.
For sure.